yourself in someone else's face. What an endless way of sunshine and change. No one knows all these moments you hold in your soul.
My life is gonna move on. Say bye to mom, say bye to the little ones. There are those who are dead, they are not really dead. I wish you would believe that they're living in my head.
I know where hell is it hello? Heaven ain't goodbye forever, time for me to go. Home is for coming from, but dreams are going through. With any luck will never come true, boo. R.I.P. to my mans and them. And how I'm still around with all them chemicals then.
So why you gonna leave so soon? I wish you would've known that I'd be there soon. Yo, why I gotta leave so soon? I wish I would've known I would wait for you.
Where's my old gang to go? I heard an old man say, I whispered in that old man's ear, you guys done gone away. I don't really need much, just a little free rein. And I can't retouch, you see the letter I sent? But to tell you the truth, I really miss your saying. And I'm sorry that I never said a word that I meant. Being around now, I'm always losing everybody. Multiple funeral by the time I was 20.
You made me braver, you made me braver. You made me better, you made me better. You let my sweater, you let my sweater. In cold weather,
cold weather.
I bet you miss me too, but I don't really care at all. I miss you. So why you gotta leave so soon? I wish you would've known that I'd be this soon. Yo, why I gotta leave so soon? I wish I had known I'm away from you.
Why you gotta leave, dude? You died too soon. John Dent's alone in a tiny room. Why you gotta leave, dude? You died too soon. Dent's alone in a tiny room.
Surgeon, give me ketamine. I fly away into a place, where I can't stay.
I can't stay.
Every time that I go outside, I'm reminded why, I can't be here. Like, hey, what's your secret?
Multiple funeral by the time I was 20, and plenty more sins. It's just making me win. So think about leaving, and I'm hard to convince. Don't kiss the twins, don't say no him. Don't worry about him. I'm trying to convey that I'm cooking the filet. I'm getting into Chevrolet. About the way,
we're riding away.
Y'all, we just riding away. Y'all, we just riding away. Y'all, we just riding away. Y'all, we just riding away. Y'all, we just riding away.
Translation? Disquarter Magazine's March issue is coming in like a lion, but it's not going out like a lamb. The issue is hitting the streets at its over 100 distribution spots made possible by our fearless advertisers, The Rickshaw, Mint Records, Timber Concerts, Blueprint Events, The Rio Theater, The Cinematech Theater, Massey Books, and the Alma Mater Society. If you prowl around Van, you'll be able to read up on Man Up Vancouver, its wild success and 10-year anniversary celebration, an interview with Shindig's majestic winner Mama Rudgal, how the Poetry is Bad for You reading series captures your soul, a poem submission by cherished Cream AT writer Samantha Nock, and, of course, a full harvest of album, podcast, and book reviews and live show reviews of local bands. Translation, forever local, forever free, always salty.
Little woman,
Is it me? Want to build your suffering? Are you crazy? Just like me, to let me close, to let me be the one. Love's a gun. Love's a gun. Pretty baby, let me know how to touch you, where to go with my fingers, with my tongue, with my anger. Love's a gun. Love's a gun.
Morning. You hear it off the beaten path. I'm your host, East Arian. March 1st, the 29th day of Black History Month, because we need our full 31. So if you're like me, you'll be celebrating Black History Month until Saturday. We're broadcasting from the unceded Musqueam and Coast Salish territory. You were just listening to Twin Shadow, Little Woman. You should check out more of their music because it's experimental and it is interesting. The video is also great, too. If you have never listened to this show, Off the Beaten Path, what we like to do here is we like to touch on a little bit of local news here in the Lower Mainland. We talk about some Canadian national news. We talk about some news to our friends down south, and then overall some global news. We like to sometimes bring on some guests, some really smart people, some really funny people. Sometimes just my friends. It can get lonely here in the station by myself. So sometimes you'll hear others. But don't be alarmed if you don't, because I can carry you and bring you off your path and onto mine for the next hour. We do this every Thursday, 7 to 8. We typically like to start off, just giving you a little feel of what it's like to live in the Lower Mainland. And if you're in the Lower Mainland, I'd like to give you your forecast for the weekend, because the goal of this show is so that as you go into the weekend and to start your next week, you can feel confident having a conversation with people about, maybe something that you learned, or maybe something that you already know. Except for, you just know a little bit more. Because that's what we do. We just push you a little bit more, a little bit further. Take you down someplace you might not go by yourself. And for the next 2 weeks here in British Columbia, the weather shall be a lot nicer than it has been. So even today, we're going to get a high of 7 and mostly sunny. And if you know, if you listen to every week, you know that when we get sunny, it's typically cold in the wintertime. And when it gets nice, it's normally, well, I say nice, the temperature, it's normally raining. But Friday, showers in the morning with the high of 5. Saturday, partly sunny, high of 6. Sunday, sunny, 6. It's looking to shape up to be a pretty solid weekend. If you have anything that you'd been thinking about doing over the past like 3 weeks when it's been raining and freezing, then you should do it, especially because once Monday hits and for the next 10 days after that, it will be raining every day. And I feel like this is the time of the year where we're just hoping that winter ends soon so that we can get into spring, because come in like a month, for me at least, it starts sailing season. And once sailing season starts, like I just pray for good weather. We might as well just jump right into some local Vancouver news. There is a lot going on. There's a lot going on, particularly in Vancouver, from companies based out of Vancouver, that really has affected all over. So if you see like a blend of the regions in the news that we talk about, it, don't be alarmed. Don't think that these problems from the south are coming and infiltrating the north. It's just, this weekend has been pretty big for Vancouver. Here, particularly in Vancouver, the news we like to talk about is drug abuse, homelessness, and housing. And it seems almost every week that you can find, like, those news stories really carry the consciousness here of Vancouverites. And it's an interesting story about what the about the opioid crisis that has affected British Columbia, and then some of the possible remedies to that. And if you read the Vancouver Sun in the morning, there was a profile on how last year the BC opioid crisis and treatment cost $90 million a year. Now, it's very difficult for me sometimes to really understand what these numbers mean. So when a government, municipality, particularly a province, says something costs $90 million a year, it's really hard to gauge, because if you look at the governmental budget, they spend $90 million on they spend $90 million on lots of things. It seems like a lot of money to us, but when you break it down, sometimes it doesn't carry that same weight. And particularly when I think about the use of opioids and what potentially is the alternative. So, you know, when you think of the alternative, it's either more policing or, you know, trying to find better ways of treatment. And so currently you can look at like the breakdown of what is being spent. But one of the things to understand is that it doesn't seem as if the problem is getting better as we continue to have more and more and more overdoses as like since 2011. And so I think that when we see like the numbers like this, particularly growing, and particularly like a really large number, it's almost well, my first thought was, well, maybe you know, maybe the provincial government is like sees these overdoses as if they see the money as the really issue instead of like the human issue, then maybe they don't see the overdoses as such of a problem as we like to think, but. I think the BC does a really good job in treating these at least when I say a really good job, I mean better than the standards like that me as an American have. But I guess they could always do better, particularly finding ways to try to help people not use drugs in the first place, so you don't have to treat them post-addiction and trying to make sure that they can remain safe. The article in the Vancouver Sun, I think, suggests it's unique, but it's new, like way of just thinking about drugs and drug use in Portugal. They have not only eliminated like the illegality of drugs, so they've made all drug use recreational. What it has done is actually it's decreased overdoses since 2001, and the population between 15 and 24 is at the lowest drug use ever in the country's history. It says it has the most people ever that have never used a drug or used a drug and not continue to use it. And it's interesting to think about what are some of the reasons that this has happened, but also we have to understand that Portugal has a minimum, has like a minimum salary, guaranteed minimum income for everyone. So it's like truly, I guess what we would say, like a welfare state, making sure that people can't fall below a certain line. And I think, and it talks about how this has an effect on, like, on the drug use and on the population. And it just makes total sense if you think that, if you think that drug use is linked to poverty and like other and poverty is the reason why a lot of people make these poor decisions. If you can help maintain a minimum income so that people are able to function and get the help that they needed and have access to the services and resources, then they should never go down that path. Or you were able to eliminate at least one catalyst of drug use. And so moving on to the next story, this isn't a drug, but for me, like this is something that is new to me. It's interesting and something that I personally would never put in my body. Well, because it's not made for me. But the there is a medical conference here in British Columbia next week, which will address, it's specifically created to like address the idea of women who eat their placentas and do something called vaginal seeding after they have C-sections and after they give birth. And so eating your placenta has been linked to like decreasing postpartum depression and all types of other health benefits, although some doctors claim there's the lack of scientific evidence. I had to do some research on it because I was very interested because I didn't know this was a thing until a few years ago, but it's become more popular as we see like celebrities begin to endorse like freeze drying your placenta and putting in little capsules and then eating it, I guess like popping like vitamins. And after doing some research, you realize that humans are like one mammals that don't regularly eat after birth and placenta. And if you know, here on the show, I like to talk about animals all the time and how humans we've really tried to remove ourselves from animals. But I feel like this is something that we can just see, like, hey, if the animals are doing it, it's good for them. Because if it wasn't good for them, they probably wouldn't do it. So, like, why are we so against it? I don't know. I feel like that's a decision that people make by themselves. But if you want some more information, there will be a conference here where you can talk about it. And vaginal seeding is something that I think that you're going to have to look up because there's not too many things that I don't feel comfortable explaining, but I just don't know how to talk about it the right way. So I'll leave that to someone else better qualified. There's also a reminder. So everybody likes to leave. I would say not everybody, maybe just me. Maybe just me and my friends who don't know how to eat. We all know the people who don't like to eat chicken the way that it's supposed to be eaten, particularly chicken wings, particularly the flats, you know, where they leave all those type of people. We know that those type of people and me like to write reviews on Yelp and Google. And if you didn't know that I like to do that, maybe you have a Google review about you that you haven't read. And we believe that there's really no consequences to writing a review and talking about some of the service that you received. Well, that is not always true. A woman in Richmond was ordered to pay $115,000 after her defamatory post ruined a Chinese photographer's wedding business. So there was a woman, and she specialized shooting wedding photos for the Chinese population in Richmond. And so one woman didn't like her pictures and wrote on Facebook how this woman's business was a scam and how she didn't actually come take the pictures. She sent like one of her professional photographers to go send her pictures, which is true. And throughout all of that, the woman's business suffered because in Richmond, like, word of mouth and reputation is such a big deal that the woman's business basically went down to zero. And the woman who made the complaints had to pay $115,000. Now, I feel like this story is both in the CBC and it's in a Vancouver Sun. So if you wanted to take a look, you can try it out. I don't know if I agree with the ruling. I think that it's interesting that if you make posts on the internet, because people feel that their internet posts are basically, you know, just their opinions and what do they think? They don't really feel that they have real effects. It's why we see like cyberbullying and why it's such an issue is because people don't feel that people think that they can say whatever they want on the internet and it doesn't have any effect on the people. Now, I really don't think that you can cyber bully a business. And I find it hard to believe that one person could write such horrible reviews that it could kill any business, particularly a photography business, when there is photo evidence of your work. And so if I was this woman who was ordered to pay $115,000, I feel like that there has to be a fight in that, because I'm not paying $115,000 because you're because I called your business a scam. Now, for the woman whose business was ruined by the comments, she talks about how it's not about the money, but it's about the principle for everything that she's built. And while she says that, I am pretty sure she's not going to turn down that money. And nor should she, because I feel like if you get offered money, you should take it. If you are a holder of a $1,000 note, now I didn't even know that Canada printed $1,000 notes. They are made out of paper. They also make a $500 bill, a $25 bill, a $2 bill, and a $1 bill. Well, they used to, but they've brought all of these out of circulation since they've gone to the plastic money. If you've ever been to Canada, you know that the money is funny and it's pretty. But those banknotes will be going out of circulation. So if you're here listening to the radio and you're driving to work or you're getting ready for work or you're at work and you seem to be holding on to $1,000 bills, $500 bills, $25 bills, $2, or $1 bill here in Canada, you need to get those replaced at the bank or they will no longer become, they will no longer be legal tender. This is because people are counterfeiting them and if people are counterfeiting them, that means the bank will be particularly suspicious if you bringing them in. So if you're hiding them under your mattress, if you're hiding them under your mattress or maybe in your piggy bank, and you know you're really feeling uneasy about maybe you might be holding a counterfeit $1,000 bill, listen, you can bring it to me, and I will take possession of it as it is no longer legal tender, and I'll figure out what to do with your $1,000. And so I think that's a good plan. So if you, let's say anybody listening to this radio who has $1,000, $500 bill, listen, and you call the station at 604-822-2487, 604-UBC-CITR, I will get it sorted out for you. But I'm not exchanging $1,000 for $1,000. You're just going to have to give it to me, and we're going to work on faith. And if you feel like I have done you wrong, write about it on Google Reviews. When we get back, we're going to talk a little bit about some Vancouver sports stores who are following in United States footsteps. And if you want to hear more about that, stay tuned until afterwards.
Hey there. This ad caught your attention. It also caught the attention of the coolest people from Squamish to Bellingham, music fans, students, and members of various cultural communities. If you want your ad to do the same, advertise with CITR and Discorder. If you've got a rad new ad or just something you want to share, whether in print, on air, or online, promote your wares, services, or events with us. Contact us at advertising@citr.ca or call 604-822-4342. Visit citr.ca for rates, information, and packages. This is the end of our ad, and if you're still here, we must be doing something right.
Discorder, that free magazine from CITR, has been documenting the best in music, arts, and culture since 1983. Let's see what one man of prestige has to say about Discorder.
What up, though? This is Big Snoop Dogg, and I fucks with Discorder magazine. How about that?
Smoke weed every day.
Pick up a copy around Vancouver or f*** with Discorder online at discorder.ca.
I got hoes calling a young nigga foe. Where's Ali with the motherfucking dog? I be balling like a
motherfucking. You're back with All The Beat and Path here on 101.9. CITR, Vancouver's radio station. I'm your host, Issa Aaron. And if you'd like to come in and bring in your $500 note or your $1,000 note, maybe your $25 note, listen, I'll take two and $1 notes as well. You can call in at 604-822-2487. That's 604-822-2487. Over the last 2 weeks, since February 14th, which was the Parkland shooting in Florida, where 17 students were killed by a gunman. We have seen all types of, a lot of activism, particularly from these teenagers, and it's really forced Marco Rubio into a town hall. It's been forcing all of the politicians to really confront what is going on and confront the students in there and at least say something. And we've also seen corporations in there most recently take steps to, I guess, appease, you know, some of the demands from that the public has made. We've seen some companies say that they aren't going to sell sell guns to people under 21 anymore. Companies going to make to go above and beyond the federal standards and the state standards to have background checks and to do other checks to make sure that people who are buying guns are legally allowed. I think I saw a statistic. It was like 288,000 people or guns that were sold to people who later wouldn't be able to own a gun. Not later, wouldn't be able to own a gun. They weren't legally allowed to own a gun, but they bought them, and 288,000 guns shouldn't have been sold to those individuals. So we've seen like a lot of backlash coming around this issue, and it sparked like a different type of corporate activism where companies are doing more. So it's interesting because there's two articles on CBC and one on Vancouver Sun about corporate activism irrespective of the guns. So one was talking about Bell Let's Talk and Pink Shirt Day, so about anti-bullying, but the guns is a different issue because it's not, you know, while mental health and bullying is something that you can talk to people about and, you know, and really increase the awareness of issues that a lot don't even know exist or don't see them as issues. A lot of people see bullying as just something that happens as a kid. They don't realize like the levels that bullying can go and the levels of, and the things that kids go through, particularly, and not just kids, but people online, people who are just vulnerable to that type of behavior. But also, like Bell, Let's Talk, it's mental health. It's something that something that our awareness is increasing in, but we don't have the full social strength behind it to try to help people get through a lot of the things that they're getting through. But when we talk about guns are, everybody's aware of guns. Everybody knows what guns is. I feel that gun awareness is pretty high. So this corporate activism isn't so much about promoting the message and trying to create a halo effect on their business. It seems to be a little more genuine than that because as it's hard to believe that these companies think that the subtraction of guns from their retail outlets is going to increase their sales. So it seems on face as a genuine gesture, which is very hard to think that a corporation would do something like that. But what we've seen, particularly here in Vancouver, MEC is a sporting goods company similar to REI in the States or Sports Authority or one of those large box outdoor stores where they sell all types of stuff. And while MEC doesn't sell, they never sold firearms, what they're doing is they're going to stop selling Vista Outdoor Products. And so Vista Outdoor Products, they supply things such as Camelback and like Bole and Bushnell, some other brands that don't actually have to do with guns, but Vista brand owns a company which also manufactures hunting rifles and AR-15s. And so MEC is going to basically end their relationship with Vista. And while I think that is a way to show, particularly like these large corporations, Vista can probably just sell off its gun part and get the business back to from MEC. But it's interesting that these corporations are really using like the citizens' tactic of boycotts to try to push their agendas. And so what we've seen is that there are a lot of people, particularly here in BC, in up north, that are really trying to understand, one, how is this boycott really going to help people and really going to help the idea that we need less guns? Because, one, MEC never sold guns, so it's not as direct as some of the other companies, which we're going to get to in a little bit. From their stopping their gun sales, they're really trying to hurt the company which manufactures the guns, which is like the next step in what we think of like this this corporate activism, this corporate social awareness, is not only just banning and making the obvious easy answers, like to stop selling AR-15s, but to really try to hurt the company. So while I like, it's hard to look at these things that these companies are doing and see anything that's bad from them or see how it could possibly be polarizing. So that's one of the issues is that a lot of people feel that this is polarizing, that MEC stops selling this Vista is going to politicize them. And what I think that it does is when people talk about this politics, they're really talking about this power. And so it's hard to see now in 2018, like, where does the power lie? If it lies with the government or if it lies with these corporations, because what we have seen is that these corporations are in power and they have the power to make the decisions. And so if they see that the government isn't going to stop the sale of or limit the sale of these firearms, then it's their responsibility once they get pushed by the people. It's interesting because in the same article, this gun range instructor who talks about why the boycott of Vista is kind of silly, he says that no one is boycotting GE, who makes missiles, and he's got a fair point because GE manufactures missiles for the United States government, and those missiles are often used to bomb countries. So if we are so insistent on the idea that we need to ban guns, particularly in the States, think we need to ban guns because hundreds and thousands of people are harmed by gun crimes every day, and not just gun crimes, but accidents and other things, then we should probably look into trying to affect the corporate activism that is affecting not just the people in the States, but people out of the States as well. One of the most interesting things about this gun stories about these companies which aren't selling guns anymore is that Walmart and Kroger's a grocery store, are stopping to selling AR-15s as well. And so in Dick's Sporting Goods, and is another store. So it's another store similar to MEC, which has stopped selling AR-15s and limiting their gun purchases to people under 21. And the most surprising part for me is that, one, I didn't know Kroger, the grocery store, sold guns, because it seems to go totally backwards in my head. I don't know why you would need a gun if you're at the grocery store, because all of these people talk about how they need these guns to kill their food, yet you're at the grocery store buying your meat. I don't understand. And if you are at Walmart or Dick's Sporting Goods, these are stores with sporting sections, like sporting. I could see if they sold, a hunting rifle, like similar to the one they put Old Yeller down with, you know, one of those long rifles that you can shoot ducks with, or I don't actually know what kind of guns that they use to shoot animals with, but I'm pretty sure that they don't use M16s or like the civilian equivalent in AR-15 to shoot animals. I don't think that nobody's deer hunting with an AR-15, and so I don't understand why those things were sold in Walmart and Dick's Sporting Goods in the first place. And so when Dick's and Walmart and Kroger said they're going to stop selling AR-15s and only sell to people under 21, I feel like that's a clear and obvious showing that, you know, this was never about the hunting rifles. They never intended to, like, this was never about hunting or for sport. And so whenever people bring that argument up, it's so disingenuous, because Walmart, Dick's Sporting Goods, those are sporting goods stores. Like, they should sell guns for sport. And if they, as soon as they go beyond selling these guns for sport, so like handguns and shotguns and AR-15s, then you know that those weapons are intended uses for something else, and it was never about the sport. When we get back, we will be talking about some sports. real sports. So, stay tuned.
I eat dinner in Dolce. I slip the clothes off a caramel, bitch. I eat that bitch just like a damn Ferrero Rocher. Ay, running out that check, running out that check. Damn, it's like some Nike Roche. Yeah. Playing with them cars, that's Texas Hold'em. I'm sipping on that Texas potion. Take these bitches' phone from them when they come through the dope. Bad bitch trying to draw blood from my finger. I ain't
know what scream was broke. You're back with All The Beaten Path here on 101.9 CITR, Vancouver's radio station. None of you have called in to hand in your $1,000, $100, or $500 bills. I assume it's because you don't know the number. The number is 604-822-2487. So, we're going to be talking a little bit about some sports. So, if you have listened to the show over the last year, one of the biggest stories that we talk about, because it happened week after week, was Colin Kaepernick. And so, what Colin Kaepernick really did was he started a I don't think that Colin Kaepernick will be forgotten, but what we have seen is that this movement has moved beyond him and into this entire league movement where people were taking a knee during the national anthem. And it's crazy to think that that was over a whole year ago or a whole season ago, to think that's when it started. And what we saw was there are a lot of companies who came out and in support or against the players and some in the stances that they were taking against police brutality and the unfair treatment of black and brown people under the law in America. But also, I don't think that as Canadians, like people here, can look at the treatment of black and brown people in the States and like wag your finger, because one, I think that if there was more black and brown people in Canada, particularly in, like in here in Vancouver, I feel that issues might not be the same, but there will be some, there would be some. And if you don't believe that, you can like just next time, I mean, I wouldn't suggest actually going up to a black and brown person and asking them like what are their experiences are here in Vancouver, but you should ask them about what are some of the types of things that people say to them, because like maybe increasingly, I feel like it's increased over the last few months. Like when I first moved here, not really many people said anything, but in the last few months, people have been saying some very, very interesting things to me on a weekly basis. So back to the story. What we saw was that there were a lot of companies who came out for either for or against the players in the movement. One of them was the sponsor of, like, was the official pizza sponsor of the NFL, which was Papa John's. And Papa John, he came out and said, and really chastised the NFL for not taking a harsher stand against the players, which to some felt like the microphone of the owners who were saying that, you know, there needs to be more of a stand taken by the NFL to make sure that the players continue to stay quiet, and they were just replaced by Pizza Hut, which is better pizza. So I actually used to like Papa John's, and while they don't really have that many Papa John's here, there was one on Alma, and I would go out of my way to eat it. But since John decided to reveal himself, which I feel like is something that we probably should have known, Pizza Hut just became a more natural fit in my life. And when I mean a more natural fit, I mean I moved above one, and my life's never been better. So we salute the NFL for taking Papa John's on as a sponsor, but we still boo them for their treatment of everyone else and all of the people. And particularly, that Colin Kaepernick will probably not play in the NFL again. And it's a shame, because what we know is that we know that 20 years from now, everyone's going to be talking about how Colin Kaepernick was on the right side and how they were totally for him, when we know that there will be receipts like Facebook posts and Instagram posts and tweets which will show otherwise. And I think that's probably one of the best parts of the internet era, is that you'll be able to see exactly what people were thinking during these times as we continue to move forward, because one, there's going to be somebody whose job it is to go through and scrape your social media and pull everything off and pull all of the negative and bad things you ever said. At one point, it'll probably be brought up in interviews. Eventually, there will be a tool they can just search for things like this. And if you've ever been, if you're on Facebook, you know that these memories will constantly come up every year and will remind you of your opinions that you once held, or the opinions that you still hold that you can't believe that, wow, I can't believe how smart I was in 2010. Can't believe how smart I was in 2017, when you're saying that when it's 2030 and you are like, you know, a millennial who is now too old. So it's interesting, because now we see sports activism, like basically since Colin Kaepernick breathed new life into the idea of athletes having a voice, we've seen athletes all over take aims at other systems they believe is corrupt. They believe are corrupt. So LeBron James this week, and over the past 2 weeks since the shooting, has talked not only about the shooting, he's talked about the corrupt NCAA. A lot of other NBA players have also talked about the corruptness of the NBA, particularly as it comes from these scandals that have been going on. And it's only scandal because kids are getting money, and not even always a lot of money. And it's interesting because, like, as a former Division I football player, me personally, nobody paid me to play football. I wasn't that good. But I do know people who received, I would say, like, small stipends from boosters. And if someone's going to give you money because they want you to play football at a specific school, or they're going to give you money because they feel that you need it, and they feel, and they take, you know, extra enjoyment beyond the ticket price to watch you play, and they want you to be, they want you to just continue to be able to be you. There's nothing wrong with that. It was, I felt that there's the NCAA is so wildly hypocritical. Like, I had a competition with a professor, with my advisor, about if I could get a 4.0, I could get a dinner. And she had to ask the compliance officer if she could take me out to dinner after I got a 4.0. And my compliance officer said no, that would be an illegal benefit. So for something that was totally unrelated to football, knowing that no one is ever going to pay me to play football, I wasn't even able to go to Red Lobster. Now, or, I mean, where I went to school, that was probably the nicest restaurant within, like, a 40-mile radius, which, I mean, says a lot about just going to school in Southeast Ohio, which I wouldn't replace for anything. But it shows the ridiculousness of the NCAA. But I like how athletes now are, in the face of people telling them to just shut up and dribble, you know, are coming out and really voicing their opinions, not just as people, not just as humans, but, like, as multi-millionaires, like, 100 millionaires. Like, LeBron James is worth, like, almost $700 million. If in the normal case of, like, a business person, you know, being worth nearly $1 billion, there's not one person who would say, shut up and continue to make computer chips, or, you know, shut up and continue to sell fruit. Because the way that we think about money gets totally skewed when we talk about athletes. Money brings cachet and this outwardly given, like, leeway of wisdom. So people believe the ability to generate capital, the ability to generate money, determines whether someone is smart or not smart. It's the reason why Donald Trump has been able to be so successful over the years, is that he has built his empire largely on the idea that, one, he owns luxury, and, like, he owns the concept of luxury, like the luxury apartment. And he is really ambiguous about his wealth. And so, people believing that he has this unattainable amount of wealth adds to the cachet that he's just a smart guy. And it only doesn't work, particularly when they're athletes, and particularly when the athletes are black, is that we don't get that same carryover of wisdom just because they have money. Like, the ability to generate money playing a sport automatically disqualifies you from being smart or being allowed into the sphere of intelligent or academic intellectual conversations. And I think that as we continue to move forward, hopefully those type of stigmas are going away. I mean, obviously there are some athletes I would never want speaking for me, and I don't want to hear from. I don't even care about what they say. But there are also some businessmen or businesswomen who live in that same realm. I don't want to hear what they have to say at all. But LeBron doesn't fall into one of those people. I don't know LeBron personally, but I feel that for someone who has been in the spotlight since 17 or really 16, and has had really outsized expectations of his life from the moment he was first on the Slam cover. And the first moment we learned about who LeBron James was. He's lived up to like all of those expectations and more, and not just on the basketball court, but off of the basketball court, like as a father or and as a person who, as a philanthropist. And so when he's talking about particularly social issues such as gun control and the NCAA, he's someone I think we should listen to, because I think LeBron is probably pretty smart, but he surrounds himself with smart people. Now, the way he uses social media is kind of corny, congratulating himself. But I guess even when you got millions and millions of fans all around the world, you are still your biggest one. So shout your success from the rooftop. Because I feel that people have been waiting to see LeBron fall for a long time. When we get back, very quickly, we'll go through some of the most interesting stories that have happened today, such as Donald Trump was nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize. You might be surprised.
I don't know how we did it, but we got here. Traded my bravery and for fear. And I don't know what to do but to stay here. Tied up with feelings of doubt. Ooh, I wanna let it all out. See, I'm not mad enough, but I don't really think that you know what it means. Saying it just because. Tell me why you're always running. If I'm not mad enough, how do I get where I'm going? You always seem like you know it. Do you really think that you own it?
You're back with Off the Beaten Path here on 101.9 CITR, Vancouver's radio station. I'm your host, Issa Arian. And what we'd like to do at the last few minutes is talk about some of the things that have gone on in this world that you might find interesting. And so one of those is that Donald Trump was nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize. However, like lots of different things in his world. This Peace Prize seems to be fraudulent. And so the director, Olav Nolstad, says there's good reason to believe that the Trump nomination is fake. It also filed a report with the Norwegian police because listen, we all know that he doesn't deserve a Nobel Peace Prize. A Nobel Peace Prize for ideology of peace by force. It's interesting that you control the President of the United States through the Nobel system. Also this week, a New York woman allegedly poisoned a lookalike with cheesecake to steal her identity. So, in Brooklyn, a New York woman who fled her home country of Russia after allegedly poisoning an identity theft victim was recently arrested for attempting the same crime. So, in 42-year-old Victoria visited her friend Olga in Queens to deliver a cheesecake. Both women look similar with dark hair and eyes. The woman ate the cheesecake, fell ill, and laid down. And before passing out, Victoria tried to steal her clothes, her wallet, her identity, her passport, and her employment cards. And basically just tried to steal this woman's life. And luckily, the woman didn't die, but her friend, was charged with attempted murder and theft and reckless endangerment. And I guess it's crazy to think that times are so tough for people, and that like a tactic you just learned in your home country of stealing identity, you would try to bring to the United States and then steal your friend's identity as if this was like some poor movie gone wrong. I could see that as a movie plot, probably Adam Sandler movie where you try to steal your friend's identity, because I feel like he's the type to write a movie like that. And so in the last idea of corporate activism, athlete activism. So what we saw yesterday was typically when players win the NBA championship or the NFL championship, they get a trip to the White House. And what we've seen is a large increase of players who have decided to decline invites to the White House.